Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I'm your host, Angela Butler. This afternoon on Show Talk with Angela Butler, we have with us a guest, a special guest, the distinguished Dr. Walter Burns. Good afternoon, Dr. Burns. How are you doing?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm okay.
This is Angela?
Yeah, this is Angela. I'm okay.
I feel honored to appear on your show this evening, and we look forward to whatever you throw at us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Yes, sir. You are the pastor of which church?
I'm a pastor of the Christian Home Community Baptist Church in the Riverdale section of Metro Atlanta.
Okay. Was the president a Morehouse pastor of that church before?
Not a particular church. The first pastoral assignment I had as an interim at Shiloh Baptist Church, Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Shiloh was pastored during the 20s for 6 years by the late Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays during a stint that he was teaching in Morehouse. He pastored Shiloh Baptist Church, Atlanta, and, of course, maybe 40-some years, almost 50 years after he was there, I was a young seminary student doing my field work, and I was assigned as interim pastor there. The late Dr. Gresham, who was pastor, had retired, and there was a period the church was without a full-time pastor, and I was chosen by the Pastoral Search Committee to be interim. And, of course, I candidated for the pastorate of that church. I did not get it, but I was pretty young, and I was in my early, I was about 21, 22 years of age. But I got another church just as good in Gwinnett County, Georgia. I stayed there a pretty good while.
All right. How many doctoral degrees do you have?
Okay, we're not gonna stay on that, but four, and one of them happened accidentally. The first one was at Southern Seminary in Systematic Theology. The second one was American in education. The third was in law, or is in law, and the fourth is from a school in Maryland, and we got it in 2009. I have always been taught the value of a good education, and I can go back three generations, and I do not say this to be braggadocious or boastful. I was blessed that my great-grandfather got a chance to come to Georgia to be educated at the Augusta Institute, which is now Morehouse College, and that he went to the University of Chicago Medical School, and that he practiced rural medicine in Texas until he moved to the city of Houston. That is my mother's grandfather. Both of my parents were educated, and they taught us that education was not only a means toward earning a good living, but living in an evolving world, one's growth depends upon one's ability to learn and know. And so I've heard it all my life. And I tried to teach it to my child. And I'm teaching it now to my granddaughters and grandsons. I'm very proud of their achievements in school.
Okay, you should be. You should be. What position were you elected to in Georgia?
I was elected to the Georgia, the Board of Directors of the Georgia Healthcare Association. That was in 1976. I was a young member. I didn't see that coming. I was in a convention at near where you broadcast from. I was in Sea Island, Georgia, Jekyll Island, Georgia, rather, at a convention of the Georgia Nursing Home, Georgia Healthcare Association. And I was nominated from the floor to serve a term. I served three terms. I ended up serving three, but I was nominated during the time that President Carter was preparing to become President of the United States. And, of course, I met him then. And, of course, the Georgia Healthcare Association ended up working in our spare time for his candidacy for president. I appreciated being given the right to serve on that board. I got to know a lot of people, and it was a blessing. I perceive the good that has happened to me as not necessarily earned by me, but are blessings from God. Now, I've had to work hard to achieve, if you want to use the word achieve, but I've been blessed of God. I was blessed to have functional parents. I was blessed to have educated parents and grandparents. And I was blessed with many things that have come my way. And I'm thankful and ever grateful to God for his goodness and his graciousness toward me and my family.
All right. Okay. Would you tell my listener what the kitchen cabinet is with President Barack Obama?
Okay. The kitchen cabinet, the president's kitchen cabinet, is formed based on something that happened in 1803 when Andrew Jackson was the president. Naturally, you don't have enough positions in your administration to officially appoint people to jobs such as Secretary of State, Secretaries of Health and Human Services, and Attorney General, but you have often a wealth of knowledge around you. I worked with President Obama's campaign for the first campaign for president from the time he announced in the old spot where President Lincoln had announced for president. From that time forward, I worked and made contributions, and in addition to what I was already doing, I worked for his being elected. And I received an appointment to what he reactivated that Andrew Jackson started, a kitchen cabinet, they called it. And I was placed and made an honorable member in August of 2009 of President Barack Obama's kitchen cabinet. And one of the proudest days is one of the scariest days when that certificate was delivered to my home and I received it and I was told what it was. It was something very important. And then the men calmly left and Of course, it had a letter of commendation from the president. It has a certificate in it, and it becomes a public knowledge that you're a member, and you're called known to maybe attend something at the White House to be involved. I've had the opportunity twice to go as recently as last month. I will have that opportunity in the future, no doubt. But I don't take it. I'm human, and you appreciate meeting and shaking hands in personal flesh with the President of the United States. But I take it as a serious gesture, and I try to let my behavior and conduct representing him and representing other things in my life be exemplary as he tries to be.
Okay. All right.
I hope I'm not tying the time out.
No.
But.
All right. When did you first meet President Barack Obama? Was it when he was a senator?
He was a state senator representing Chicago. And I attended a banquet in Chicago, and I met him through being in attendance. My brother and some other persons introduced me to him. And my brother said, this man could probably be your president one day. I took it with a grain of salt then, until he became a United States senator, and I heard him speak at that first, while serving in the Senate, when he spoke as a keynoter at the Democratic Convention. And then later, the President Bush was president from the Republican Party, but President Obama spoke on behalf of congressional persons at that convention, and I heard the dynamism with which he spoke. I could hear the visionary thoughts as he let them come sliding out, and they kind of rolled. I saw great thought, great preparation. I saw an intellect that was not just a fake. I saw a deeply intellectual man who was very mature for his age and whom I began to like for more reasons than one, and I could perceive it. And I prayed to God that he would become, and I joined his campaign working to do what I could, however minute that was. He put together a lot of the minute situations and made them so that he was elected president, and a few days, if I'm correct, he was named, and this doesn't happen often, he received the Nobel Peace Prize. He was named 9 days after he was elected president to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. Some people live 1,000 years and try to beg and do things after their original service to get it. But he was named based on what he had done in Chicago at the grassroots. He allowed his steps to be ordered. And I don't mean to preach on your show today, but he allowed his steps to be ordered by the Almighty God.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I have a question, and this is just, I'm just going to ask your opinion. If the election was held today, do you think that Republicans will win against President Barack Obama?
No, I don't think. No, my opinion is, I heard a renowned journalist and panacea of journalism make a statement, and he spoke with an educated tone. He's not just somebody giving opinion, but he said the country likes and has confidence in President Obama, and that is a fact. He's liked best, but leadership is most effective when people trust a leader. He has conducted himself very much above board. His wife has been there. She's been a leader, and she's loaned her various skills and intellect. His daughters have been very quiet, and you know, he has let them grow up, and he has given his best, I think, every chance he gets.
Okay. All right. How do you feel the news media is doing President Barack Obama? Do you think he's being treated fairly by the Republicans, or that the press is treating him fairly?
Well, the press primarily is owned by people who happen to be Republicans. We do have constitution and freedom of press, but there is a sector in the press. The press is in operation for one thing, a small percentage to inform, another part to make money, to earn large sums of money. And they tend to ride with the tide that leads toward that. Many things they say are correct, and your most successful press, for instance, like the GMA group on ABC that was named as the number one news group on the TV media. These people come forth with objectivity. Now, it's obvious that preference in most instances on the show is President Obama, but they don't just lean to him. They ask him the hard questions, and he has to be able to answer the hard questions under pressure. Sometimes I think he's asked some unfair questions. There are some ugly things said to him. But when you are asked the tough questions, you start thinking it. And President Obama has been trained to think critically.
Okay.
He was the first president of Harvard Law Review. He was a great lawyer. He was a great law professor of constitutional law and one of the best law schools in the world, on earth. And he thinks on his feet very well. A person, he thinks under pressure very well. And if you notice how well he is handling foreign affairs, his Democratic opponents said he didn't know enough about foreign affairs. But the foreign affairs situation that we've gotten into, he has handled them with the least amount of bloodshed, handled them with dignity, and handled them successfully. He's recognized by foreign leaders, and we need those foreign leaders China and some of those countries who had turned back against us are coming back. Jobs are coming back to this country that have been sent overseas.
Yes.
That's
yes.
because of the confidence in the president. If you got a leadership, if you got leadership and quality leadership, people feel comfortable whether they agree with everything he or she would say. And I say he or she because you could become president. You can. And I want you to think, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And you could be the host of 60 Minutes 2020. That's not an impossibility.
Okay.
I can see it happen. I want you to go back and look under the Women's Hall of Fame in the state of South Carolina. This little girl made it to the Hall of Fame. She's a teenager in high school. Her family relocated after she did something for our community in the Dillon, South Carolina area. She made it to the White House and was honored by the president and Mrs. Obama because even though she stood with tears coming from my eyes and helped her community to get a new money for a new school.
Okay.
She is 16 or 17 years old. I am proud to say that I baptized that little girl this past summer at my church. I baptized her, and her picture is on my website, our church's website. You can see her name there, and you can see this pastor and she in the water where she's getting baptized. God did that.
Yes,
I
God
was
did.
The instrument. I was the instrument he used. He could have used anybody else. But she joined our church, and she was baptized by this. And I sent a copy of that picture to the president's office. And, of course, he has a way of responding to let you know that he got something. And he's a great man. And you're a great host, and I appreciate you're having me on your show. I'm honored, as I said. You bestow a big honor on me when you,
you.
Place me here. And I wish
you,
for you the best as you pursue your career and your life's work. Hang
Thank
in
you.
There, okay?
I will.
Mm-hmm.
I have some other questions. Where were you when President Barack Obama was elected? Where were you at?
I was at an assembly area here in Atlanta. We had people on the phone, and when we got that he had gotten enough electoral votes to be elected.
Okay.
I stood there, and I'm not what you would call a crybaby, but tears of joy flowed.
Oh,
and I
my
began
goodness.
To
I
close
also.
My eyes and thank the Almighty God and ask Him for safety for the Obama family and for vision for the president and his family. I didn't ask him for an easy way for the president, but I said make him able to perform that task with such dignity, as Dr. King says, to do it as well as Michelangelo carved marble.
Okay.
and painted the Sistine Chapel, making him do it so well that people dying, dead, or unborn couldn't have done it better.
Okay.
I asked that, and then I got on the phone with my brother in Chicago, and my brother was out. I got him on his cell phone. He was out at that park. Reverend Jesse Jackson and others came on TV crying, basking in the moment. Because
basking,
I can remember when I came to Morehouse College from Houston, Texas, at age 15, I could see remnants of Jim Crow and segregation still existing even in Atlanta. And I see a young man who was an acolyte at the time Mrs. Burns and I were married. And he's not that much younger than my wife. He's younger.
Okay.
He was a high school senior, I think. And she was a young teacher. We were married. And I was an administrator, school administrator, and pastor. He was an acolyte, and he's mayor of Atlanta, and he's bringing some good things to Atlanta.
Okay.
And doing a great job.
Okay, the mayor of Atlanta, okay.
Mayor Kasim, the Honorable Kasim Reed, young man about 39, 40 years old.
All right. What advice would you like to say to the youth of today? What advice would you like to give to the youth?
People in general? I'd like to say to our young people that you face adversity sometimes, but adversity only makes you stronger if you move into it. Move into it, get the best education you can. Don't think you have to go to college. We need some young people. George Washington Carver, Dr. Carver wasn't wrong. We need some young people to pick up some trades again. Yeah, become, own your own business. Learn some trades. Everybody doesn't need to be a physician. We need some business owners. We need some men who can run big construction companies. We need plumbing. The average electrician makes more than earns more than the average dentist. We need some electricians. We need men and women trained in to work with air conditioning, HVAC. We need them to get trained in roles to work alongside physicians and technicians or become technicians of the like. But do your best. Do something worthwhile. Do something that you feel passionate to do. My job has never been a job to me. It is a calling. It is something I enjoy doing. I've never seen my job as work. There are moments when it becomes trying. I say to people, learn to grow and grow and grow and don't give up. Give it your best shot and come back and regroup. And keep pushing. If Oprah Winfrey could do it, certainly you can do it. If President Obama can come from poverty and do it, you can do it. He was poor. He was from a dysfunctional family where his father left. But he's not angry at his father for leaving. If
okay.
you would read his books and read the history of his life, he seems to carry a soft place in his heart for his father. And he wrote a book to honor his father. He's written one regarding thinking and thought and visioning. And his most recent work was to honor his little girl.